The Snow Goose, a short story by Paul Gallico. Episode 2. One November afternoon, 3 years after Ryder had come to the Great Marsh, the child approached the lighthouse studio by means of the sea wall. In her arms, she carried a burden. She was no more than 12, slender, dirty, nervous, and timid as a bird. But beneath the grime, as eerily beautiful as a marsh fairy. She was pure Saxon, large boned, fair, with a head to which her body was yet to grow, and deep-set, violet-covered eyes. She was desperately frightened of the ugly man she had come to see, for legend had already begun to gather about Ryder, and the native wildfowlers hated him for interfering with their sport. But greater than her fear was the need of that which she bore, for locked in her child's heart was the knowledge, picked up somewhere in the swampland, that this ogre who lived in the lighthouse had magic that could heal injured things. She had never seen Ryder before, and was close to fleeing in panic at the dark apparition that appeared at the studio door, drawn by her footsteps. The black head and beard, the sinister hump and the crooked claw. She stood there, staring, poised like a disturbed marsh bird for instant flight. But his voice was deep and kind when he spoke to her.
"What is it, child?"
She stood her ground, and then edged timidly forward. The thing she carried in her arms was a large white bird, and it was quite still. There were stains of blood on its whiteness, and on her kirtle where she had held it to her. The girl placed it in his arms.
"I found it, sir. It's hurt it. Is it still alive?"
Yes, I think so. Come in, child, come in. We'll bandage it close to her body, so that she cannot move it until it has set, and then make a splint for the poor leg."
Her fears forgotten, the child watched, fascinated as he worked, and all the more so because, while he fixed a fine splint to the shattered leg, he told her the most wonderful story. The bird was a young one, no more than a year old. She was born in a northern land, far, far across the seas, a land belonging to England. Flying to the south to escape the snow and ice and bitter cold, a great storm had seized her and whirled and buffeted her about. It was a truly terrible storm, stronger than her great wings, stronger than anything. For days and nights it held her in its grip, and there was nothing she could do but fly before it. When, finally, it had blown itself out, and her sure instincts took her south again, she was over a different land, and surrounded by strange birds that she had never seen before. At last, exhausted by her ordeal, she had sunk to rest in a friendly green marsh, only to be met by the blast from the hunter's gun.
"A bitter reception for a visiting princess," concluded Ryder. "We will call her La Princesse Perdue, the Lost Princess, and in a few days she will be feeling much better. See!"
He reached into his pocket and produced a handful of grain. The snow goose opened its round yellow eyes and nibbled at it. The child laughed with delight, and then suddenly caught her breath with alarm as the full import of where she was pressed in upon her, and without a word she turned and fled out of the door.
Wait,
cried Ryder, and went to the entrance, where he stopped so that it framed his dark bulk. The girl was already fleeing down the seawall, but she paused at his voice and looked back. "What is your name, child?"
"Frith."
"Eh?" the rider. "Fritha, I suppose. Where do you live?"
With official folk at Wickledrath."
She gave the name the old Saxon pronunciation. "Will you come back tomorrow or the next day to see how the princess is getting along?" She paused. In a grain, Ryder must have thought of the wild water birds caught motionless in that split second of alarm before they took to flight. But her thin voice came back to him.
"Aye."
And then she was gone, with her fair hair streaming out behind her. The snow goose mended rapidly, and by midwinter was already limping about the enclosure with the wild pink-footed geese with which it associated rather than the barnacles, and had learned to come to be fed at Ryder's call. And the child, Fritha, or Frith, was a frequent visitor. She had overcome her fear of Ryder. Her imagination was captured by the presence of this strange white princess from a land far over the sea, a land that was all pink, as she knew from the map that Ryder showed her, and on which they traced the stormy path of the lost bird from its home in Canada to the great marsh of Essex. Then, one June morning, a group of late pink feet, fat and well fed from the winter at the lighthouse, answered the stronger call of the breeding grounds and rose lazily, climbing into the sky in ever widening circles. With them, her white body and black tipped pinions shining in the spring sun, was the snow goose. It so happened that Frith was at the lighthouse. Her cry brought Ryder running from the studio.
"Look! Look, the princess! She be going away!"
Ryder stared into the sky at the climbing specks.
"Aye," he said, unconsciously dropping into her manner of speech. "The princess is going home. Listen, she is bidding us farewell." Out of the clear sky came the mournful barking of the pink feet, and above it, the higher, clearer note of the snow goose. The specks drifted northward, formed into a tiny V, diminished and vanished. With the departure of the snow goose, ended the visits of Frith to the lighthouse. Ryder learned all over again the meaning of the word loneliness. That summer, out of his memory, he painted a picture of a slender, grime-covered girl, her fair hair blown by a November storm, who bore in her arms a wounded white bird. In mid-October, the miracle appeared. Ryder was in his enclosure feeding his birds. A grey northeast wind was blowing, and the land was sighing beneath the incoming tide. Above the sea and the wind noises, he heard a clear, high note. He turned his eyes upwards to the evening sky in time to see first an infinite speck, then a black and white pinioned dream that circled the lighthouse once, and finally a reality that dropped to earth in the pen and came waddling forward importantly to be fed as though she had never been aware. It was the snow goose. There was no mistaking her. Tears of joy came to Ryder's eyes. Where had she been? Surely not home to Canada. No. She must have summered in Greenland or Spitsbergen with the pink feet. She had remembered and had returned. When next Ryder went into Chelmbury for supplies, he left a message with the postmistress, one that must have caused her much bewilderment. He said, "Helfrith, who lives with the fisherfolk at Wickledroth, that the lost princess has returned."
3 days later, Frith, taller, still tousled and unkempt, came shyly to the lighthouse to visit La Princesse Perdue. Time passed. On the great marsh it was marked by the height of the tides, the slow march of the seasons, the passage of the birds, and for Ryder, by the arrival and departure of the snow goose. The world outside boiled and seethed and rumbled with the eruption that was soon to break forth and come close to marking its destruction. But not yet did it touch upon Ryder, or for that matter Frith. They had fallen into a curious, natural rhythm, even as the child grew older. When the snow goose was at the lighthouse, then she came too, to visit, and learn many things from Ryder. They sailed together in his speedy boat that he handled so skillfully. They caught wildfowl for the ever-increasing colony, and built new pens and enclosures for them. From him, she learned the lore of every wild bird, from gull to gear falcon that flew in the marshes. She cooked for him sometimes, and even learned to mix his pen. But when the snow goose returned to its summer home, it was as though some kind of bar was up between them, and she did not come to the lighthouse. One year, the bird did not return, and Ryder was heartbroken. All things seemed to have ended for him. He painted furiously through the winter and the next summer, and never once saw the child. But in the fall, the familiar cry once more rang from the sky, and the huge white bird, now at its full growth, dropped from the skies as mysteriously as it had departed. Joyously, Ryder sailed his boat into Chelmbury, and left his message with the postmistress. Curiously, it was more than a month after he had left the message before Frith reappeared at the lighthouse, and Ryder, with a shock, realized that she was a child no longer. After the year in which the bird had remained away, its periods of absence grew shorter and shorter. It grew so tame that it followed Ryder about, and even came into the studio while he was working.